Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. Two activist lawyers, Ralph Nader and Bruce Fine, spoke on the government's violation of the Constitution, spoke at Harvard Law School on February 8. I found Nader's speech especially compelling. In fact, this was the hardest-hitting speech by Nader I've ever heard. It's a damning indictment of the Obama and Bush administrations alike. And it's a plea to law students to discover their power and moral authority, and to use them to defend the Constitution and promote justice. Apparently, Nader's audience was mostly first-year law students. 1Ls, they call them at Harvard. Apparently, the third-year students were off practicing for that interview with Goldman Sachs. And the faculty was busy writing Obama memos arguing that unprovoked bombing of another country, murdering civilians, and torture do not violate the Geneva Conventions or U.S. law. Well, the Harvard 1Ls got quite an earful from a guy who was a Harvard 1L himself back in 1956. Here's Ralph Nader.
Second, is there anybody from the faculty here? Okay. Third, are there any notables in the administrative hierarchy of the Harvard Law School here who keep the institution going? Okay. How many here are 1L, please? How many are 2L? How many are 3L? Precisely as predicted. That's what the law school does to you. You come in idealistic. You actually think the law has some connection with the word justice, which Senator Daniel Webster once called the great work of human beings on earth. And by the time you're finished, if you're not exhausted, you're heading into mostly these corporate law firms who are the power brokers for a great deal of the criminality and the Wall Street shenanigans that have been going on. They are the brilliant geniuses of facilitating the subjugation of the law by raw corporate power, all in the name of the law. Now, we are members of a profession that have historically continued to lie to ourselves. Most professions lie to themselves. A lot of doctors don't think there's much malpractice, for example. And lying to ourselves estranges ourselves from reality. So we live in illusion. We live in illusion that was expressed in September when John Brennan came here. How many of you were in the room when John Brennan was there? See, very few. And he arrived here, and he gave a speech. Now, John Brennan is the assistant to President Barack Obama for Homeland Security and Counterterrorism. And he gave a speech entitled, "Strengthening Our Security by Adhering to Our Values and Laws," end quote. He dared to come to the Harvard Law School and present a rendition of very nice-sounding values, which were almost entirely fictional in terms of what the White House has been doing. Just the opposite. And Harvard Law School didn't lay a glove on him. And he got away with it. And he got away with it because his audience was fawning, largely fawning over him. It was not this audience. If you want to read it, it's online, and you will see that he makes a remarkable series of statements. First, our highest priority, Mr. Brennan said, is and will always be the safety and security of the American people. As President Obama has said, we have no greater responsibility as a government. Who defines security and safety? Those who cause most of its transgressions. The styles of violence that are described in our country and given highest priority are those that are not responsible to corporate power. They are not traced to corporate power. And so while 3,000 people were massacred on 9/11, which generated a massive counterterrorism business with trillions of dollars in war and armaments and domestic security activities and jobs and consultings and think tanks and equipment, And it was all to keep America safe. Here's what was going on. Every year, 45,000 people dead every year, according to Harvard Medical School researchers, because they don't have health insurance, they can't afford it, to get diagnosed and treated. Every year, 58,000 Americans die from workplace-related diseases, according to OSHA, and trauma. Every year, 65,000 Americans die, according to the EPA, from preventable pollution. Every year, 100,000 Americans die every year due to hospital malpractice, not counting emergency rooms. Harvard School of Public Health study. In other words, there are well over 300,000 Americans who die from preventable causes and certainly should reside under the definition of national security that aren't even part of a single dialogue in any political campaigns of the major parties. They are not the preoccupation of Barack Obama, who has spent more time figuring out how to kill a suspected terrorist overseas in his briefings every morning than he has spent on all of these preventable American deaths, including far larger numbers of sick and injured people who are directly under his authority and responsibility to do something about it. And yet, right after 9/11, the world was on our side. Even our adversaries sent statements of commiseration. And instead of pursuing the backers, the attackers, as a police criminal action, we decided to blow apart two countries and attack other countries, Afghanistan and Iraq, one of the greatest war crimes in American history. And in so doing, we began to immolate our own constitutional rights. Obama said a few days ago in the State of the Union that for the first time in 20 years, Osama bin Laden will not present a threat to the United States. His job was finished a long time ago. He put into motion forces fortified by greed, power, profit, sense of domination, where we're doing it to ourselves. Think of the huge diversions of public budgets to the military and to the so-called war on terrorism that could have been used for child health care, for the renovation of public works, for the protection of the environment, for the advancement of decent education, for the abolition of poverty. We're doing it to ourselves. His work is done. We are two major terrorist strikes away from a police state, the likes of which you will never be able to imagine. Look what one terrorist strike did to us, and we began doing it to ourselves. The problem with law students today is they don't have a high enough estimate of their own significance. Yes, they're often viewed in the literature as confident and boastful a little bit about their intellect, and very aggressive, and very self-motivated. But what they don't understand is that they're preparing themselves to be spokes in gigantic corporate and governmental wheels. Spokes. Well paid. What they don't understand about themselves is their own power, which I'll get to in a moment. The American Bar Association in 2005-2006, led by Michael Greco, who's a corporate lawyer downtown in Boston, issued three white papers, one of which Bruce worked on, claiming that the president then, George W. Bush, was engaging in unconstitutional behavior. Not an episode, not a single event, systemic unconstitutional behavior. Illegal surveillance, violation of the FISA Act. That's a 5-year jail term. It's clearly an impeachable offense. Systemic signing statements, they thought was an unconstitutional pattern of behavior. He engaged in more signing statements than all the presidents, I think, put together before him. Now, when the ABA, which is the largest bar association in the world, known for its conservatism, can present the President of the United States with three white papers claiming that he's been engaging in consistent unconstitutional behavior and not get a single courtesy letter back acknowledging receipt, never mind interacting through the Office of Special Counsel or the Attorney General. You can see that what has happened in the last 10 years is an institutionalization of constitutional criminality from the violation of the congressional power to declare war to federal statutes to international treaties to Geneva Convention to national sovereignties abroad. Those three reports hardly made a ripple on law schools. We have over 180 law schools in the country. What are they there for? When I was a law student, 1L, we sat in the courtroom there, which we would be there for the speech, but I understand there's a commercial bar, Cram Course, that has taken a residence there. By the way, don't ever pick your courses based on your bar exam fears. The bar exam is eminently crammable in more ways than one. So, don't say I'm not going to take jurisprudence because of the bar course. Robert Hutchins. Hutchins, as you know, I don't know, maybe you don't know, he was dean of Yale Law School at age 29. He was president of the University of Chicago. He came to Harvard to speak to us. And he asked the question, what is the purpose of the Harvard Law School? Everybody sort of snickered and laughed, you know. What the heck kind of question is that? Doesn't he know that the Harvard Law School only has two purposes? It's to establish a very smart faculty, the best and the brightest. If you don't believe it, all you have to do is ask them. And to matriculate a very motivated student body. It doesn't have a collective voice. Didn't he understand that? Well, he was dean of Yale Law School, no wonder. He was dismissed. We now have a president, and his predecessor the same, who has arrogated to himself the role of prosecutor, judge, jury, and executioner. That is something that might diminish whatever trivial occupations by comparison are involving the faculty and the law students of America. The rationalization of illegality is endless. If there was a dictionary of antonyms to the word infinity, one of the examples would be the ability of members of the legal profession to rationalize illegality from A to Z. The rationalization of illegality sometimes is abrupt and sporadic and challengeable, Joe McCarthy. But when the rationalization of illegality, when the allowance of the corporate state and the military-industrial complex, the former was warned by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the corporate state, called it fascism, 1938 in a dispatched to Congress. And the latter was warned by President Eisenhower in no uncertain terms, the military-industrial complex. When it goes on year after year, it becomes institutionalized. And when criminality becomes so institutionalized, it hardly is a subject for topics by law reviews. That's the way things are. Secret law, secret evidence, no charges, imprisonment without charges, without lawyers, indefinite. This is America? This has to be dealt with instrumentally. We are banking revenge overseas. Before the 13th drone strike killed a suspected Pakistani terrorist a few months ago, a dozen drone strikes killed over 200 people, innocent, in search of him. The banking of revenge sometimes takes a long time to exhibit itself. After all, we supported vicious dictatorships in those areas of the world, repressing their people with our military arms, our diplomatic cover, our vetoes in the UN, And it took a long time for them to say, we're going to strike the U.S. at its homeland. Banking revenge, you will see in your lifetime. And if it isn't physical armaments, it will be biological and chemical. Our country is so vulnerable, it could go down as the most vulnerable country in the world. Subways, pipelines, dams, laboratories, waste deposit sites, radioactive material. We're sitting ducks. The great mistake the public made was that after 9/11, when it was clear that this criminal gang did not have a second strike capability, that's when the war on terrorism was created. And when President Bush said there are Al-Qaeda cells, sleeper cells all over the country, they're well-funded, they hate us, they're suicidal, why didn't they strike? We were defenseless, as we are defenseless to any suicidal attack. Because they weren't there. And see, we took a criminal gang and turned it into a major war and an announcement that we would go anywhere, into any country, unilaterally, and wreck our violent will without observing our own constitution and statutes. Now, I'm going to end by just reading the list of violations that have occurred as a result of 9/11. You can have copies of this. It was put together by a great law professor who's too good to teach at Harvard, Professor Jonathan Turley at GW Law School. Professor Jonathan Turley, also a litigator, great defender of the aggrieved, said, in the decades since September 11, 2001, this country has comprehensively reduced civil liberties in the name of expanded security state. They form a mosaic of powers under which our country could be considered, at least in part, authoritarian. And this will take 1 minute. And here are his 10 losses of freedom directly attributed to the reaction of our government and its supporters after 9/11. Assassination of U.S. citizens. Indefinite detention. 3, arbitrary justice. The president now decides whether a person will receive a trial in the federal courts or in a military tribunal, a system that has been ridiculed around the world for lacking basic due process protections. 4, warrantless searches. 5, secret evidence. 6, war crimes. And that, of course, involves such things as immunizing CIA employees from being investigated or prosecuted for such actions. Secret courts. Immunity from judicial review. That's spreading. Continual monitoring of citizens. And 10, extraordinary renditions, which belies President Obama's statement that his administration will no longer torture. It's just subcontracted. That's all. Those are the 10. You can come up and get them if you'd like. Let me end with a brief sermon about law students. The trouble with you is that you're behaving as if Harvard Law School is a trade school. High-priced, highfalutin. The difference between a profession and a trade is a profession is ministered to prevent exactly the problem that it is skilled to treat for a retainer. So doctors should be preventing disease and trauma, even though they make money when they have to deal with them. Lawyers should be preventing conflict. We had a great opportunity after 9/11 to wage peace together with a police action enforcement. To wage peace. But the powers that be who realize this have not stepped forward with the requisite moral courage. After the drumbeats to the war in Iraq, where 1 million Iraqis have died at least, we don't even count them anymore, 300 former retired military officers with generals and admirals, and Admiral Shanahan, General Zinni, 300 military officers retired, diplomatic officials retired, and national security retired, spoke out publicly against the invasion of Iraq. the people who could have supported them into a major infrastructure and quadrupled their number in a month to stop this invasion. And that included George Soros, who wrote and spoke against the Iraq War. Didn't have the imagination to put a couple hundred million dollars of media and staff behind that in the months before the invasion of Iraq, which could have exposed the lies and the cover-ups and the falsifications of Dick Cheney and George W. Bush, permitted by a compliant media and an ink blot Congress. Could have stopped it in its tracks, a couple hundred million dollars. He makes that in a month. Our leaders to be are you. And you've got to have a higher estimate of your role. Someone once asked me, how many women were in your class, Mr. Nader? 13. How many blacks? Maybe 2. How many Hispanics? Maybe 1. At Harvard, most of the Hispanics were children of Latin American dictators and oligarchs. And so your predecessors fought against the war in Vietnam. They fought for civil rights, sometimes being beaten up and imprisoned in the South. They fought and made the environment a major issue with Earth Day, 1970. They fought to give you not just diversity, but to give you diversity with a purpose. What's the purpose of the diversity other than career gratification? When Mr. Obama was running for president and I criticized him, and people said, how can you criticize me? You're the first black American. I said, I just want to make sure. I want to try to make sure that it's not just an upwardly mobile career move. It's got to mean something. You speak with moral authority to working lawyers and faculty and judges. You may not know that. But when in the past law students have put out petitions and proclamations, the rest of the profession knew that those were heartfelt expressions of idealism. They knew that the law students did not have a commercial retainer to motivate them. They knew that the law students did not have an axe to grind. And that's why they knew the law students had moral authority. And you can communicate with tens of thousands of law students over the internet free, which we couldn't back then. And you can mount a movement to restore constitutional practices and the greatest idea of Western civilization, which is due process. Go for it. Thank you.
For Mr. Nader, do you have any in mind, any like strategies that people could use, given that there is so much concentrated power that happens to be entrenched?
The strategies to focus on Congress. The other point that's key is the moral authority of law students bleeds on the moral authority of the faculty. You get more and more people from the law schools standing up. You are the sentinels, aren't you? You're the first responders for the rule of law. It'll begin rolling forward into other areas and other professions. There are a lot of retired military and intelligence and diplomatic people who are sick to their stomach as to what they're seeing in the last 10 years. It's too bad Tony Schaefer was not here. He saw the massacres. He was there when he said to the fighter planes, don't hit that building, it's a madrasa. And the missile hit the building and slaughtered everybody in it, the school. And so once the groundswell builds up, you'll see a lot of establishment figures who are retired and free to talk, and whose patriotism was never going to be impeached by these draft-dodging neocons in Washington. They will begin swelling. This can all happen very rapidly, and of course that'll get more media.
A poll of Americans showed that 80% of Americans support the killing of Al-Awlaki and support our drone war, including 55% of self-identified liberals. So my question to you guys is, cheer me up. I mean, basically, like, what are we to do with that?
One of the great elements of due process is called cross-examination. And there was never any argument publicly reaching all these people polled as to why they should have another opinion. So obviously, if a prosecutor comes into a courtroom and with all the evidence, there's no counter evidence, and there's no appeal to the rule of law and due process, they would come out that way. Take a look at the other polls where people do have some knowledge and experience. 82% of the American people think the country's going in the wrong direction. 75% of the American people think corporations have too much control over their lives. 62% of the American people believe the two major parties are failing them. So you see, that comes from a background of a little knowledge and experience in the marketplace and so on.
Why not look at the whole class structure? This is a system of capitalism, a government of the rich, by rich, and for the rich. There's two classes, working class and the ruling class. Since 1960, I've been a socialist. I'm for the working class, having a working class government and taking over the capitalist government, which is their government, not our government. Their democracy, we need workers' democracy.
Well, you see, my references in my prior remarks alluded to a lot of that. It's all a seamless web, isn't it? It all connects together. Concentration of power radiates in all directions. The abuses that attend it radiate. The more unaccountable they are, the more devastating the consequences. And so we're seeing declining livelihoods for 80% of the American people in real terms since 1973, unemployment and poverty and child poverty and so forth. So anybody who says we don't have class warfare from the top down is not...
No, in fact, James Madison in Federalist 10 describes the most prominent source of factions as unequal distributions of property, so it's not a novel idea.
That's Bruce Fine, Nader's younger colleague and podium mate, cutting Nader off at the end. A rip-roaring speech by Ralph Nader at Harvard Law School on February 8. Nader raked Bush and, even more so, Obama over the coals for their clearly impeachable crimes against the Constitution and against us, the people of the United States of America. Unfortunately, impeachment of the president is performed only by Congress, and Congress and Obama and Bush and the Supreme Court clearly are part of the same criminal gang. Nader does end on a positive note. He exhorts the law students to stand up like they used to, urges them to be first responders in defending the Constitution and the cause of justice. Nader's talks show he well knows how corrupt the system has become, yet there's that vein of optimism that he has never lost. Maybe that's some Lebanese ethnic quirk, I don't know. I wish I could tap into that vein and borrow a pint. Nader's comments were taken from the video by Harvard Law School and gently edited by me. New World Notes comes to you from WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. Please check out newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Illegitimi non carborundum, in flagrante delicto, habeas corpus, and ciao.